Osho, the grass grows by itself. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 2.
Every time Lao Tzu was not busy, Yen Sheng took the opportunity to beg for secrets. Lao Tzu kept turning him away and would not tell him, until eventually he said, "I used to think you intelligent. Are you really as vulgar as all that? Here, I will tell you what I learnt from my own master. 3 years after I began to serve the master, my mind no longer dared to think of right and wrong, and my mouth no longer dared to speak of benefit and harm. It was only then that I got so much as a glance from the master. After 5 years, my mind was again thinking of right and wrong, and my mouth was again speaking of benefit and harm. For the first time, the master's face relaxed into a smile. After 7 years, I thought of whatever came into my mind, without any longer distinguishing between right and wrong, and I said whatever came into my mouth, without any longer distinguishing between benefit and harm. And for the first time, the master pulled me over to sit with him on the same mat. After 9 years, I thought without restraint of whatever came into my mind, and said without restraint whatever came into my mouth, without knowing whether the right or wrong, benefit or harm, were mine or another's, and without knowing whether that master was my teacher or not. Everything was the same. Now, you come to be my disciple, and before even a year has gone round, you are indignant and resentful, time and time again."
The greatest art in the world is to be a disciple. It cannot be compared to anything. It is unique and incomparable. Nothing like exists in any other relationship. Nothing can exist. To be a disciple, to be with a master, is to move into the unknown. You cannot be very aggressive there. If you are aggressive, the unknown will never be revealed to you. It cannot be revealed to an aggressive mind. The very nature of it is such that you have to be receptive, not aggressive. The search for truth is not an active search. It is a deep passivity. In your deep passivity, you will receive. If you become too much active and concerned, you will miss. It is like being a womb. It is feminine. You receive the truth as a woman receives a pregnancy. Remember this, then many things will become easier to understand. To be near a master is just to be a passivity, absorbing. Whatsoever the master gives, or whatsoever the master is, not asking. The moment you start asking, you have become aggressive. The receptivity is lost. You have become active. The passive, the feminine, is no more there. And nobody has ever reached to the truth like a male. Aggressive, violent. That's not possible. You reach very silently. In fact, you wait and the truth reaches to you. The truth seeks to you like water seeks a hollow ground, moves downwards, finds a place and becomes a lake. An active mind is too much filled with itself. An active mind thinks that he knows what truth is. Only one has to ask. At least the question is known. Only for the answer one has to seek and search. But when you become passive, even the question is not known. How to ask? What to ask? For what to ask? There is no question. One cannot do anything else than but wait. This patience, and this is infinite patience, because it is not a question of time. It is not a question that you wait for a few months or a few years. If you have a patience for a few years, that won't help. Because the mind who thinks that he has to wait for 3 years is not in fact waiting. He is looking actively when the 3 years are over. Then he can jump and be aggressive and ask. Then he can demand in fact that the period of waiting is over now. I am entitled to know. There is nothing like that. Nobody is ever entitled to know the truth. Suddenly, the moment you are ready and your patience has become not of time but of eternity. Not that you are waiting for something, but simply waiting, because the waiting is so beautiful. The waiting itself is such a prayerful mood. The waiting itself is such a deep meditation. The waiting in itself is such a tremendous achievement. Who bothers for anything else? When the waiting has become so total, so intense, so whole, that time disappears and the waiting takes the quality of eternity. Immediately you are ready. Not entitled. Remember, you cannot ask. You are simply ready. You are not even aware that you are ready, because the very awareness will be a hindrance in your readiness. The very awareness will show that the ego is there watching by the corner, hiding somewhere. And the ego is always aggressive, whether hiding or not hiding, apparent, not apparent. Even hiding in the deepest corner of the unconscious, the ego is aggressive. When I say to become totally passive is the art of being a disciple, I mean to dissolve the ego. Then there is nobody who is asking, demanding. Then simply there is nobody. You are a vacant house, a deep emptiness, simply waiting. and suddenly all that you could have asked is given to you without asking for it. Jesus says, ask and it shall be given to you. But that is not the highest teaching. Jesus could not say the highest teaching to the people who were around him. They never knew how to be a disciple. In the Jewish tradition, teachers have existed and students. But a disciple or a master is basically an Eastern phenomenon. Teachers have existed who have taught many things, and students have existed, sincere students who have learned much. But Jesus couldn't find disciples there. He couldn't say the highest. He says, ask and it shall be given to you. Knock and the door shall be opened unto you. But I tell you, if you ask, you will miss. If you knock, you will be rejected. Because the very knocking is aggressive. The very asking is of the ego. In the very asking, you are too much. And the doors cannot be opened for you. In the knocking, what you are doing? You are being violent. No, at the doors of the temples, knocking is not allowed. You have to come to the doors so silently that even your sound of your feet is not heard. You come as in nothing, as if nobody has come. You wait on the door. Whenever the door will open, you will enter. You are not in a hurry. You can sit and relax on the door. Because the doors know better than you when to open. And the master inside knows better than you when it should be given. Knocking at the door of the temple is vulgar. Asking a master is unmannerly. Because he is not going to teach you anything. He is not a teacher. He is going to transfer something to you from his innermost being, a treasure. And unless you are ready, it cannot be done. The pearls cannot be thrown before the swine. The master has to wait when your swine has disappeared, when you are awakened and you have become really human and the animal is no more there, the aggressive, the vulgar, the violent. The relationship between a master and a disciple is not of a rape. It is of deepest love. And that is the difference between science and religion. Science is like a rape, aggression on nature to know the secrets of it. Science is a violent effort to force nature to reveal its secrets. Religion is love. It is a persuasion. It is a silent waiting. Making oneself ready prepared so that whenever the moment comes of your inner readiness, suddenly there is a tuning. Everything falls in line. Nature is revealed to you. And this revelation is totally different. Science may force nature to give few facts, but the truth, no. Science will never be able to know the truth. At the most, robbers, aggressive, violent people can snatch away few facts, that's all. And those facts will be off the surface. The innermost center will remain veiled for them, because to reach to the innermost, violence is not to be used, cannot be used. The innermost center must invite you, only then you enter there. Uninvited, there is no way. Invited as a guest, you enter into the inner shrine. The relationship between a master and a disciple is the highest possibility of love, because it is not a relationship of two bodies. It is not a relationship of any pleasure, of any gratification. It is not a relationship of two minds, two friends, in subtle psychic harmony, no. Neither it is bodily, it is not sexual. Neither it is mental, it is not emotional. It is of two totals coming together and merging into each other. And how you can be a total, if you ask a question? If you are aggressive, you cannot be total. A totality is always silent. There is no conflict within. That's why you cannot be in conflict without. A totality is serene and tranquil and collected. It is a deep togetherness. Waiting near a master, one learns how to be together. No movement. A simple unmoving center simply waits. Thirsty, of course. Hungry, of course. Feeling the thirst in the every fiber of the body, in the every cell of the being, but waiting, because the master knows better when the right moment comes, not knocking. The temptation will be there, and when the master is available, the temptation becomes very, very deep and intense. Why not ask him? He can give. Then why wait? Then why waste time? No, it is not a question of wasting time. Really, waiting patiently is the best use of time. All else may be wasting, but waiting is not. Because waiting is prayer. Waiting is meditation. Waiting is all. Everything happens through it. And I call it the greatest art. Why? Because between a master and a disciple, the greatest mystery is lived. The deepest is lived. The highest flows. It is the relationship between the known and the unknown, between the finite and the infinite, between time and eternity, between the seed and the flower, between the actual and the potential, between past and future, A disciple is only the past. The master is only the future. And here, this moment, in their deep love and waiting, they meet. The disciple is time. The master is eternity. The disciple is mind and the master is no mind. The disciple is all that he knows, and a master is all that cannot be known. When the bridge happens between a master and a disciple, it is a miracle to bridge the known with the unknown, time with eternity. It is a miracle. Doing is on the part of the master, because he knows what to do. The doing is not on your part, should not be on your part, because by your very doing you will disturb the whole thing. You don't know what you... How can you do anything? A disciple waits, knowing well that he cannot do. He does not know the direction. He does not know what is good and what is bad. He does not know himself. How can he do anything? The doing is of the master. And when I say doing is of the master, don't misunderstand me, because the master never does anything. If the disciple can wait, the very being of the master becomes a doing. Just his presence becomes a catalytic agent, and many things start happening on their own accord. A great master, Jenrin, has said, somebody asked what you do with your disciples. He said, what I do? I don't do anything. The question asked, but so many things happen around you, you must be doing. Jenrin said, sitting quietly, doing nothing, the spring comes and the grass grows by itself. This is what a master is doing, sitting quietly, doing nothing, waiting for the right moment, the spring. Suddenly, when the disciple and the master will be meeting, there will be spring. The spring comes and the grass grows by itself. And this is how it happens. A master simply sits, not doing anything. And a disciple waits for the master to do something. And then comes the spring. The moment when they meet, and then the grass grows by itself. In fact, truth is a happening. One has only to allow it. Nothing is to be done directly. One has only to allow it. You will not be able to know it unless it happens. Because whatsoever you know is that when you do something, only then something happens. When you don't do anything, nothing happens. So you are completely oblivious of a totally different dimension of things. But if you observe your own life, you will see many things is still happening without your doing. What you do? Well, love happens. The grass grows by itself. Suddenly, the spring is there. And something flowers within you. Flowers for somebody. You are in love. What have you done? That's why people are so much afraid of love, because it is a happening. You cannot manipulate it. You cannot be in control. That's why people say love is blind. In fact, just the opposite is the case. Love is the only clarity of vision. Love is the only eye. But people say love is blind because they cannot do anything about it. It takes their possession. And they are no more in control. They are thrown off saddle. That's why they say it is blind, because reason is not there. It is irrational. It is like a madness. It is like a high fever. It is something that has happened to you. It is like a disease. It appears so, because you are no more in control. Life has taken over. Truth is of the quality of love. That's why Jesus goes on saying, love is God, or God is love, because the quality is of the same source. Truth also happens like love. You don't do anything about it, not even knocking on the door. You breathe in, you breathe out. That is what life is. How you do it? Are you the doer? Then hold your breath in. For a few seconds you will come to know that you are not the doer. You cannot hold it for long. Within seconds, the breath will force itself out. Hold it out. Within seconds you will feel you cannot do anything. The breath is forcing in. In fact, the grass grows by itself just like breathing. It goes on its own accord. You are not the doer. But the ego avoids looking at such facts. The ego looks only at things which you can do. It accumulates, chooses facts which can be done. It avoids, throws things into the unconscious which happen. Ego is very choosy. It doesn't look at the life in its totality. Truth is a happening, the final happening, the ultimate happening, in which you dissolve into the whole, and the whole dissolves into you. It is, in the words of Tilopa Mahamudra, the ultimate orgasm that happens between one unit of consciousness and the total consciousness, and the total ocean of consciousness, between the drop and the ocean, the total orgasm, in which both are lost into each other. The identities dissolve. The same happens between a master and a disciple. The master is of the quality of the ocean, and the disciple is still a drop. The finite meeting the infinite. Much patience is needed. Infinite patience is needed. Hurry won't help. Now try to understand this beautiful Zen parable. Each word has to be allowed to reach your deepest core of being, because this is what you are here for. If you can understand this story, it will be easier for you to be closer and closer to me. Every time Lihitazu was not busy, Inseng took the opportunity to beg for secrets. Lihitazu is one of the masters of the school of Lao Tse, one of the enlightened disciples of Lao Tse. and Litasu is not an ordinary master, not concerned with your small problems, not concerned with small teachings, your actions. Litasu is concerned only with the ultimate. He had many disciples. There are two types of disciples. One type of disciple is chosen by the master. Another type of disciple is who has chosen the master. Their qualities differ. This man, Inseng, must have been of the second category. And vast is the difference. When a master chooses you, it is totally different. Of course, you will never be allowed to know that the master has chosen you. In fact, the master will persuade you in such a way that you will feel you have chosen him. He has to be very subtle about it. Because if he allows you to know that he has chosen you, your ego can create a disturbance. Because the ego likes to be the master. The ego likes to be in control. Every day I encounter the same situation. I have not to allow you to know that I am choosing you. I have to give you freedom to choose me. But the difference is vast. Because when a master chooses a disciple, he chooses with perfect understanding. He looks through you, all your potentialities, possibilities, past and future. The whole destiny is revealed to him. But when you choose a master, almost always you will be wrong. Because you grope in dark. Not knowing who you are, how can you choose? Not knowing what is truth, how can you choose a master? How can you judge? And whatsoever you judge is going to be wrong. I say unconditionally. It is not a question of whether something can be wrong and something right. No, whatsoever you choose will be wrong because you are in darkness. You don't have the inner light by which to judge. You don't have any criterion. You don't have any touchstone. You cannot know what is gold and what is not gold. So a sincere seeker simply allows the master to be. A sincere seeker allows the master to choose him. A foolish seeker tries to choose the master. Then from the very beginning trouble arises. Litasu and his master, Lao Tse, they were totally in a different quality of relationship. Lao Tse has chosen Litasu. This Inseng had chosen Litasu. And when a disciple chooses, he is aggressive. From his very choice, the aggression starts. And a master cannot reject, even if you choose him. Just out of his compassion, he cannot reject. Every time Litasu was not busy, Inseng took the opportunity to beg for secrets. that begging is not really begging. It is just a way to snatch. In fact, he is aggressive, not a beggar. The begging is just diplomatic. But he is a thief, not a beggar. Whenever he finds any opportunity and Lihtasu is not busy, he starts begging for the secrets. Lihtasu kept turning him away and would not tell him until eventually he said. Many times Lihtasu avoided, postponed, told that sometime I will say to you, some other time. It is not the right moment. You are not ripe. But Insane persisted until eventually Lihtasu had to say the truth. He said, I used to think you intelligent. Are you really as vulgar as all that? What is the vulgarity? Secrets cannot be asked. You have to earn them. You have to become capable. Secrets are gifts from the master. You cannot steal them. You cannot beg them. You cannot snatch them. You cannot rob them. There is no way. Secrets can only be gifts, nothing else. So you have to be capable. Capable so that the master can give them to you as gifts. He would like to share them. But you have to rise above your ordinary mind, because the ordinary mind will not be able to share. That is what Jesus goes on saying, pearls cannot be thrown before the swines. Because the swines won't understand. The understanding is not there. You can understand words. Those secrets are not words. You can understand concepts. Those secrets are not concepts. They are not philosophies, doctrines. Those secrets are the innermost energy of the master, his treasure of being. If you rise higher and higher, then only you will be nearer and nearer the master. And only when the master feels that you can sit on the same mat, they can be given to you, not before it. Even if he wants to give, he cannot give. To whom? He would like to give it out of his compassion. But they will be simply wasted. It is just like it happened. A Sufi mystic, Zunnun, had a disciple. The disciple must have been like insane, persisting, asking again and again. One day, Zunnun gave him a stone and told him to go to the market, to the vegetable market, and try to sell this. The stone was very big, looked beautiful. But the master said, don't sell it, just try to sell it, observe. go to many people and just report me how much we can get for it from the vegetable market. The man went. Many people looked at it and they thought, it can be a good showpiece. Our children can play with it. Or they can use it as measures for their vegetables. So they offered just few smallest coins, like 10 paisa. The man came back, he said, only at the most we can get 10 paisas for it. And responses were different from 2 paisa to 10. The master said, now you go to the gold market and ask people there, but don't sell it. Just inquire how much. From the gold market, he came very happy. He said, these people are wonderful. They are ready to give 1,000 rupees for this. Responses were different from 500 to 1,000 rupees. The master said, now you go to the jewelers, but don't sell it. He went to the jewelers. He couldn't believe. They were ready to offer 50,000 rupees. And when he won't sell, they went on increasing their offer. It reached to 100,000 rupees. But the man said, I am not going to sell it. They said, we offered 200,000 rupees, 300,000 rupees, or whatsoever you say, but sell it. The man said, I cannot sell, I am just to inquire. He couldn't believe these people are mad. He himself was thinking that the price that was offered in the vegetable market was enough. Came back, the master took the stone and said, we are not going to sell it, but now you know that it depends on you. If you have the touchstone, the understanding, you go on asking questions and you live in the vegetable market and you ask for valuable secrets, you ask for diamonds and you live in the vegetable market and you have the understanding of that market, first become a jeweler and then come to me and then I will teach you. A certain quality of understanding is needed. Only then certain truths can be given to you. And secrets, you cannot ask for them. Because in the very asking you saw that you come from the vegetable market. You have to wait. You have to wait infinitely. Then you saw that you are ready to sacrifice your whole life for it. Then you saw how much you value the secrets. You are ready to sacrifice yourself completely. Then the master simply shares his being with you. Nothing is to be given because these are not things. Energy simply jumps from the master towards you like a flame. It enters you and transfigures you completely. I used to think you intelligent. Are you really as vulgar as all that? Your this persistent asking shows a vulgar mind. You don't understand what you are asking. Juvenile, childish. You seem to be absolutely uncultured, not knowing with whom you are, not knowing what you are asking. And then he told his own story with his own master. It is a rare story. Here I will tell you what I learned from my own master. His own master was Lao Tse. The source of the Taoist tradition. One of the greatest beings who has ever walked on the earth. Says Li Tazu, 3 years after I began to serve the master, my mind no longer dared to think of right and wrong, and my mouth no longer dared to speak of benefit and harm. It was only then that I got so much as a glance from the master. 3 years passed. He simply served the master. What else you can do? You can simply serve the master. Nothing else can be done by a disciple. No questioning, no asking, no demanding. A disciple simply becomes a shadow of the master, serves him, and through service, through his love, reverence, trust, a change starts in the mind. Says Li Tazu, my mind no longer dared to think of right and wrong. It became almost impossible to think what is right and what is wrong. When you live near a master, you need not think. You simply move with him. You simply follow his movements. You leave everything to him. You surrender. Says Li Tazu, my mind no longer dared to think. My mouth no longer dared to speak of benefit and harm. Because to live near a master, your whole attitude starts changing. Because for the first time from the window of the master, you look at the total, where wrong and right meet and mingle with each other, where darkness and light are no more separate. Says Heraclitus, God is night and day, summer and winter, hunger and satiety. Through the master, first glimpses the star coming to you. The master becomes a window. The closer you come, your own understanding is thrown to chaos. Whatsoever you knew before becomes absolutely useless, futile. You are shaken. Your whole foundation is shaken. You are thrown off gear. You no more know what is right and what is wrong. You have looked through the master at the whole. And the total comprehends all. The total comprehends all contradictions. The total comprehends all paradoxes. In the total, all opposites meet and become one. That's why, says Li Tazu, no longer dare to think what is wrong and what is right. All the criterions of right and wrong dropped. All the concepts of what is benefit and what is harm simply evaporated. It was only then that I got so much as a glance from the master. 3 years of deep trust service. And when the master saw that now the old mind is no more functioning, the old mind which lives in opposites, in divisions, God and evil, ugly and beautiful, this and that, that divisive mind is no more, says Lhtazu, it was only then that I got so much as a glance from the master. What he means? Is it that for 3 years the master never looked at Lhtazu? That is impossible. Serving the master continuously, millions of times the master must have looked. Then what he means by the glance? Look and glance are totally different. A look is a passive thing. When I look at you, my eyes function as a window. You are mirrored. It is not a glance. A glance means my eyes don't function as windows, but my eyes start functioning as a pouring of my energy into you. They are not passive. They are loaded with the master's energy. When the look is loaded with master's innermost energy, it's a glance. It is a very creative force. It simply goes to your very heart, arrow. It penetrates to your very deepest core. In a sense, it is like an arrow because it penetrates. In another sense, it is like a seed. You become pregnant. A glance is that look which makes you pregnant with the energy of the master. A glance is totally different than a look. In a glance, the master travels from his own being to your center. A glance is a bridge. The master must have looked at Lhtazu many times in 3 years, but it was not a glance. And you will know the difference only when I will give you a glance, or sometimes I give you. And whenever I give the glance to a certain person, only he knows, nobody else can know it. The glance has to be earned. You have to be ready for it. The look is okay, but the glance has a very intense energy in it. It is a transfer of the master's being. The first effort when he penetrates you. It was only then that I got so much as a glance from the master. Remember the difference between a look and a glance. A look is just a look, nothing more. A glance is qualitatively different. Something moves. The look becomes the vehicle. It is no more empty. Something travels with it. If you have fallen in love with somebody, you may know what a glance is. The same woman had looked at you many times. But it was ordinary look, as everybody else looks at you. Then suddenly one day, is spring morning, and she gives you a glance, it is totally different. It is an invitation. It is an offer. It is a call. Suddenly something pierces into your heart. Now the woman is no more the same, and you are also no more the same. Something has happened between you. Something only you two will know. Something absolutely private. It is not public. Nobody else will be aware that something has happened, that a look has become a glance. But this is nothing. A love glance is nothing compared when a master looks at you, and it is no more a look but a glance. Because when two lovers look at each other with a loving glance, they stand on the same plane. The glance cannot be very much loaded. It is just like a river moving on the same plane. When a master looks at you, it is like a tremendous waterfall, because the planes are different. It is as if Niagara falling in you. You are completely washed away. You will never be the same again. You cannot be the same again. There is no return. Once a master has glanced, your innermost being hums in a different way, lives in a different rhythm. In fact, you are no more the same. The old man has disappeared through the glance. A new being has come into being. That's what Lihitazu says, for 3 years serving the master continuously, waiting and waiting. Not asking anything. And then, one day, I got so much as a glance from the master. After 5 years again, my mind was again thinking of right and wrong, and my mouth was again speaking of benefit and harm. For the first time, the master's face relaxed into a smile. Try to penetrate into this story. This is your story. This is not something happened in the past. It is something which is going to happen in the future. All Zen stories are future stories about you. So don't think something that happened in the past. Zen is never in the past. It is always in the future. And you have to bring it into the present. What happened? Because 3 years serving with the master, he couldn't dare to think what is right and wrong. Couldn't dare to say what is right and wrong, what is harmful and what is beneficial. Then what happened after the glance? Again, the mind was again thinking of right and wrong. And my mouth was again speaking of benefit and harm. What happened? First, you think something is right and something is wrong because the society has conditioned you that way. It is not your thinking. It is not you. It is the society in you. The society has conditioned your mind. It has penetrated within you and controls you from there. Now, scientists say that sooner or later we can fix electrodes in the deepest part of the mind and through those electrodes a man can be controlled. The government can control the whole country and you will not be able to know that anybody else is controlling you. You will feel that you are doing these things. You can be pacified immediately, just a knob has to be pushed. You can be made angry, just a knob has to be pushed. Delgado did a very famous experiment. He fixed an electrode, a small tiny electrode, in the brain of a bull. And then he gave a public demonstration. He had a small mechanism in his hand, just a small radio with few buttons on it. He pushed one button and the bull rushed towards him, ferocious. And everybody became concerned that Delgado will be killed. Just at the nick of the time, exactly when the bull was going to penetrate into Delgado, he pushed another button. Suddenly, the bull stopped, as if dead, like a statue. The inside electrode is controlled by the wireless. The bull can become ferocious just by pushing a button. The bull can be stopped just by pushing a button. But this is a very, very new finding. But the society has been doing it since prehistorical days, in a different way, in a subtle way. The society doesn't fix an electrode in your mind. Soon it will do, because that will be cheaper and easier. And then there is no possibility for human freedom. It is the one of the most dangerous things that Delgado has done. More dangerous than atomic energy, atom bomb or H-bomb. Because they can kill your bodies, Delgado can kill your very soul, the very possibility of your freedom. And you will not be able to know that you are functioning by somebody else's directions. You will think you are doing it. The same is being done by society in a very subtle, primitive way. The society teaches you what is right and what is wrong. From the very childhood it goes on forcing on your mind what is right, what is wrong. Continuous repetition hypnotizes you. Continuous repetition and feedback. Because whenever you do the right, you are appreciated. Whenever you do the wrong, you are condemned. Whenever you do the right, a positive feedback is there. Prizes are given to you, appreciations. Whenever there is something wrong, a negative feedback. You are punished, condemned. This is how the society has been fixing the electrode inside you. Then it controls. If your society has conditioned you to be a vegetarian, you cannot eat meat. Not that meat cannot be eaten, but simply the electrode, the conditioning. seeing the meat, you will start vomiting. This is nothing that you are doing. It is being done by the society. And every society conditions in its own way. That's why it is very difficult to live in another society. To live in a foreign country becomes difficult. Your conditionings are different and their conditionings are different. And all moralities are nothing but conditionings. So when a person starts moving towards ultimate freedom and truth, first the conditioning of the society falls. That's what happened to Li Tazu. 3 years serving the master, watching, living, being with him. He came to know that all right and wrong are just social conditionings. They fell. Then arises your own conscience, the real conscience. The conscience that you carry right now is false. It is borrowed. Then arises your own conscience. Then you have your own vision of what is right and what is wrong. That is what happened. After 5 years, my mind was again thinking of right and wrong. And my mouth was again speaking of benefit and harm. For the first time, the master's face relaxed into a smile. Not that the master was continuously said for these 8 years, hard, serious. No, a master like Lao Tse is always laughing. He's not a serious man. Seriousness is a disease. An enlightened man is always playful. His whole life is nothing but a play. How can he be serious? What happened? For these 8 years, did Lao Tse never laughed and smiled? No, that is not the point. He must have laughed many times. And he must have smiled many times. But for Li Tazu, in his innermost being, something happened on that day. First time the master's face relaxed into a smile. A master has to hunt the disciple continuously. He has to be very hard. Out of compassion, he has to work continuously. This is about the inner face, not about the outer face. For these 8 years, Lao Tse must have followed the innermost being of Li Tazu with a very hard face. Very hard. For the inner discipline. For the first time seeing that Li Tazu's own conscience has evolved, he must have smiled. That smile is concerned not of the outer face, but for the first time Li Tazu felt many smiles from the master falling on him like showers. He could feel the master has relaxed about me. No more hard. No more a taskmaster. He smiled. Your own conscience has arisen. Now there is no need for the master to be hard about you. He had to be hard because you had a false conscience in the first place. That has to be destroyed. Then he had to be hard because your own conscience has to be crystallized. Now it has crystallized. Now you have your own center of being. Now the master can smile and relax. Half the work is done. Now, there is no need for any outer discipline from the master for you. You have your own conscience. Now you have your own inner light, which will show you what is wrong and what is right. Now you can move on your own. That is the meaning of the master is smiling. It is felt. When really you attend to your own conscience, you will feel master's smiles falling within you, sovereign. They will surround you from every corner of your being. That is the way the master celebrates the birth of your inner conscience. After 7 years, I thought of whatever came into my mind without any longer distinguishing between right and wrong. And I said whatever came into my mouth without any longer distinguishing between benefit and harm. And for the first time, the master pulled me over to sit with him on the same mat. Again, it is like a spiral, or like a mountain path. You come again to the same point on a higher altitude, again and again. The inner spiral. The false conscience fell, the conditioning of the society fell, your own inner conscience arose, now that too disappeared. After 7 years, I thought of whatsoever came into my mind without any longer distinguishing between right and wrong, and I said whatever came into my mouth without any longer distinguishing between benefit and harm. This is total relaxation. A conscience, inner conscience, is also needed, because you are not absolutely natural. An outer conscience is needed because you don't have inner conscience. The inner conscience is needed because you are not absolutely natural yet. Something wrong can happen by you. But when you are absolutely natural, what Tilopa says, loose and natural, then no harm can happen through you. Simply, you are no more. You cannot harm. Now there is no need. Your inner conscience also dissolves. Now you become like a small child, simple and pure, saying things that happen to you, thinking things that happen to you. Thoughts float in your mind. You are not concerned. Your mouth says things, you are not concerned. It is like a small child, all like a madman, absolutely relaxed, as if there is nobody in control. When the control is completely lost, the ego disappears. Because the ego is nothing but the controller. When there is no control, who are you? You are just like a river flowing towards the ocean, or like a cloud floating in the sky. You are no more there. The human, the ego, has disappeared. Now you are simply natural. After 7 years, I thought of whatever came into my mind. You cannot do anything because there is nobody to do. Thoughts come, come. If they don't come, okay. If they come, okay. Something the mouth says, there is nobody to control it. So it says. Sometimes it doesn't say anything. Sometimes somebody is asking and no answer comes. And such a man will remain silent. Somebody there is no, sometimes there is nobody asking anything, and this man laughs and answers because it comes. This man behaves like a madman. In India, there is a sect, particular sect called Baul. The word Baul means the mad. They live in this third state continuously. They do whatsoever happens. No good, no bad. No choice on their part. They move like winds. And they are one of the most beautiful phenomena in the world. They dance. They sing. Even sometimes when there is nobody on a lonely path, and they will be singing like a flower that has come to bloom on a lonely path where nobody walks. But the flower has the fragrance to spread. It goes on spreading the fragrance. They live simply loose and natural. And for the first time, the master pulled me over to sit with him on the same mat. Now the disciple has disappeared. The ego is no more there. Now the master and disciple have become one. Now there is no distinction. The master pulls Li Tzu. For the first time, pulled me over to sit with him on the same mat. Just symbolic, but deep inside, very, very significant. The master has pulled him towards him now, seeing that no barrier exists. There is no ego to resist. When the disciple disappears, the master also disappears. The master was not there, in fact, from the very beginning. It was only because of the ego of the disciple that he was the master. The disciple was ignorant, that's why he was the master. Now there is no disciple and no master. Both have disappeared. The master has pulled him on his own mat. Inside, the master has pulled him, and they have become one. This is Mahamudra. This is the orgasm that happens between a master and a disciple when they meet. A faint glimpse can come to you through sexual orgasm. Very faint. Very pale. It is difficult to have any other parallel. That's why I say through sexual orgasm, something of the same happens. Something. As a drop. Can be compared to the ocean. Just like that. Sexual orgasm is like a drop. When the spiritual orgasm happens between a master and disciple, it is an oceanic feeling. After 9 years, I thought without restraint of whatever came into my mind, and said without restraint whatever came into my mouth, without knowing whether the right or wrong, benefit or harm, were mine or another's. And without knowing whether that master was my master or not. Everything was the same. First, the good and bad disappeared. The benefit and harm disappeared. And then the idea, who is who? You and me. I and thou, they disappeared. Martin Buber has written a beautiful book, I and Thou. Jeeva's mysticism comes to this point and then remains stuck there. It is one of the very high points where the disciple and the master are the seeker and the whole come to a point of direct dialogue of I and Thou. But they remain still there. The Eastern mysticism takes the final jump. I and Thou also disappear. The dialogue also disappears. There is only silence. Everything was the same. Now, Lihitazu even is not aware whether Lao Tse is his master or not. He is not aware whether he is a disciple or not. In such moments, many unbelievable things have happened in the history of Zen. The master always hits the disciple many times in many years, sometimes throws him out of the door, kicks him. Zen masters are very harsh. And then the disciple becomes enlightened. 20 or 30 years of hard work and discipline with the master, and he comes and he slaps the master. This has never happened anywhere before. And the master laughs, a belly laugh. And he says, exactly right. You did well. It happened once, a disciple was going on a journey. And the master called him and hit him hard on the head and slapped him. And the disciple said, this is too much. I have not done anything. I have not even uttered a single word. I enter into your room and you started hitting me. This is too much. The master said, no, because you are going on a journey and I can see. The moment you will be back, you will be enlightened. And this is my last chance to hit you. Now you come to be my disciple, said Lihitazu Rinzen, and before even a year has gone by, you are indignant and resentful time and time again. 24 years took for Lihitazu to come to a point where the master pulled him on his mat and opened his heart and the hiddenmost secret of his being. And you have been only for 1 year here, and you feel so resentful, aggressive, angry, because I won't answer your questions and I won't give you the secrets you go on hankering for. What is 1 year in the infinite expanse of eternity? Nothing. But your hurry makes it look very, very long. 25 centuries have passed since Lihitazu. If he comes back, he will not be able to believe that it has become almost impossible for people even to wait for 1 year. I have come across people who say, we have come only for 3 days. I have come across people who meditate once and then they come to me and then they say, nothing has happened yet. Man has become more and more stupid, vulgar. Small things you can get easily. They are like seasonal flowers. You put the seed in the soil and within 3 weeks they sprout. But by the season ends, they will be gone. They are momentary. You can have instant coffee, you cannot have instant meditation. Particularly in the mind of the West, time is too much, too heavy. West is time obsessed. Listening to these Eastern tales, you may enjoy them, but you must be aware about your own time obsession. In the West, everything is done in such a hurry that you cannot enjoy anything. You move from one place to another, always on the go, traveling fast. The faster you go, the less significance is there in traveling. Because you reach from one point to another and all that is in between is lost. To travel by a bullock cart has a beauty of its own. To travel by a jet plane is foolish. Because it is not a travel at all, it may be a business trip. That's okay. For business it's okay. You save time. But for traveling, you have to move slow. There is nothing like wandering on your feet. Then you enjoy each moment of it, each tree that passes by. You get one with millions of things. You are enriched through it. Because of time obsession, speed has become the only goal. Not knowing where you are going, but you are very happy because you are going fast. The direction is lost. Speed is in your hand. This mind will not be able to seek the ultimate, because the ultimate means the eternal. It is not like a seasonal flower. It is the ultimate eternal tree. For it to become a soil and for it to take roots into you, infinite patience and waiting is needed. If you can only wait, then all else I can promise, it will come. You simply wait with me and everything will follow. But don't be in a hurry. And don't ask for secrets. They will be given to you when you are ready. They are always given. In fact, to say that they are given is not exactly right. When you are ready, suddenly you find they were always with you. When you are ready, you suddenly find that whatsoever you were trying to achieve was already within you. You had it always. It was already the case. The master is just a catalytic agent. He sits silently, quietly, not doing anything. Spring comes and the grass grows by itself. Enough for today.